Hi, and welcome to Cryptobiography. I'm your host, Brandon Starr. This is episode 356 of Cryptobiography, and it is a compilation of the story, A Stranger in Goldenlode. And here we go.
Welcome to Goldenlode.
Sam Lockhart didn't stop drinking from his mug, but he did glance over at the door. The saloon, which doubled as the greeting room for the largest inn in Goldenlode, was open and reasonably clean. The gravelly voice welcoming the stranger was that of Tom Printon, owner of the Big Nugget Saloon and Inn. Sam himself was contracted by the First Western Bank to keep problems moving along out of Goldenlode when they came through. Some folk coming to Goldenlode were miners, hoping to cash in on a gold rush that had long since dwindled to a trickle. Others hoped to work for one of the three still profitable mining companies, all of which deposited large amounts with First Western. All three mines knew of his arrangement with First Western and approved, even helped. And still other strangers hoped to sell goods or services, preferably at a steep markup to everyone else. The gouging had mostly stopped with the end of the gold rush, but not entirely. Sam looked at the stranger. He was unlike anyone he had seen here in town before. The dusk behind him highlighted his straight blonde hair, so light that it could almost be called white. His face was pale, with just a hint of color that suggested the man was not, in fact, an albino. Though his white hair brought to mind the idea of age, the man's face couldn't be more than 30 or 35. The man went to Tom and spoke in a voice that did not carry. Fortunately, he'd been in town long enough to know Tom's disposition by sight. The man was asking for a room, and Tom would prepare one. But, interestingly to Sam, Tom's smile was forced in a way he had never seen on the genial man's face. Tom rang a bell, and Johnny, the assistant, came. The white-haired man said a few things to Johnny, who nodded and ran out the door, presumably to take care of the man's horse and possibly wagon. Come to think of it, Sam said to himself, definitely a wagon. Even the youngest children tan dark out here, even though it's getting colder in the September nights. That man, even with clothing, couldn't help but get darker than he is without a wagon. Perhaps he has someone driving for him, even? He decided to follow Johnny out the door. Put his beard down, but didn't pay. He wasn't planning on leaving yet. Johnny wasn't far. There was a little spot to the side of the Big Nugget that was a good spot for someone with a wagon to stop, and sure enough, Johnny was leading some horses with a wagon into the back, where he could release the horses and feed and water, and if the man paid for it, groom them. They looked like they'd spent the day on the trail, though not too hard driven. They were two horses, both black with irregular white blazes traveling down their face. There were no other people, either on the wagon or who might have already jumped off. Sam checked, but all the people visible on the street were known to him. Sam followed Johnny and the wagon to the back of the inn. The wagon looked very sturdy and drew Sam's attention more than the horses. It was made of some extremely dark wood, heavily built, with a very shady area for the driver. It was different from any other wagon Sam had ever seen, but he wasn't quite sure exactly what it was that made it seem so. He looked in the back. There were some boxes tied down, but no people. Apparently the pale man was alone, unless he had dropped people off before coming to the Big Nugget. Johnny finished with the horses and took a small trunk from the wagon, which he had apparently been tasked with bringing to the owner's room. He watched Johnny lug the trunk around the corner to the back door. He noticed there was a rat near the back wheel of the wagon. May have to mention that to Tom, he thought. He didn't see any other people, so apparently the pale man was in fact doing his own driving. How he stayed so pale when he must have gone for many days was beyond him. If he wrapped himself up, it would be terribly warm, even if the days were slowly starting to approach autumn. It was time to introduce himself. He went back to the front door and opened it. The pale man was at a table by himself, a pot of tea in front of him. He walked over, making sure to do it at a slow, even leisurely pace. The man had noticed him even before he started moving and was watching him as he approached. "Hello," Sam said when he was a couple of paces away. "Name's Sam Lockhart. The bank, First Western, pays me to make sure that people who are new in town aren't going to make trouble." The man simply looked at him coolly without saying a word. "I make it my business, therefore, to meet everyone who comes through or who comes to stay. Who are you, sir, and what is your business in Goldenlode?" The man was silent a moment, then apparently decided to answer him. His voice was clear but soft. "I am Richard Dunning. I am an undertaker by trade. I am making my way west, and I will stop when I find a town where my services are needed. You seem like a man who knows this place. I understand that the gold rush may be past its peak, yet people still flock here. Can you tell me why?" Sam decided to tell him. "Small claims were never great, and they dried up," he said. "But the big three mines are all still moneymakers. Everything else in the town revolves around them." Richard nodded. He took a sip from his teacup. "And do you have an undertaker?" "We do. John Mannard. He's been here for 15 years. When the mines were just opening up. Business isn't great, though. He also makes the caskets, and because he isn't kept busy enough, does other woodworking as well." "Well, it sounds like you're all set, then. Though I'll likely drop in on Mr. Mannard as a courtesy, exchange professional tips and so on. Who knows, perhaps he's looking to retire." Sam shrugged. "I wouldn't know. John's not all that old, though." "Any other advice for someone new to town, Mr. Lockhart?" "Since you're a man with a profession, I doubt we'll have any trouble, Mr. Dunning. Enjoy your stay, however long that is." "Thank you." Mr. Dunning gave a slight raise of his teacup as though making a toast, and drank the rest of his tea. He rose and nodded at Sam. "It's been a long journey of many days, and I'm looking forward to a real bed, if you'll excuse me." Sam just gave a small nod. Richard Dunning went to Tom and settled up and got his room key. Then he went up the stairs. Sam went back to his beer. Richard Dunning was perfectly polite, clearly had a good profession which would keep him out of trouble, and had answered his questions. So why couldn't he shake the feeling that something wasn't right? Was he reacting to the man's profession and its connection with death? Everyone he knew was always been a bit leery about the town's undertaker, John Mannard, despite him being a man of genteel disposition and the finest qualities. But Sam didn't count himself among them, and he was not superstitious, so why was Richard Dunning any different? His thoughts were interrupted when a man came into the saloon. Sam knew him, Gabriel Ortham, though people called him Gabe. Young, early 20s, he used to work in the Hathrum Mine, one of the three mines around Goldenlode, but he injured his foot in an accident and walked with a limp. He did small jobs of any kind he could to make money. One of the things he did was to bring information to Sam of the kinds he knew he'd appreciate, any word of new people in town, or any skullduggery he'd caught wind of. Gabe walked right up to Sam. "Hey, Sam, someone new's in town," he said. "I'm afraid I've already met the man," Sam said. "Had a short chat with him. White hair, came in a dark wagon." Gabe looked a little crestfallen. "Yeah, that's the one," he said. "I saw him at the bank a while ago, talking with the manager." "You were in the bank?" No, Gabe said, looking a little embarrassed. "I saw him coming into town and knew you'd have an interest and followed. He stopped by the bank. I watched through the window." "Could you tell what they were up to?" "No," Gabe said. "They didn't exchange money or anything, and I couldn't hear them at all. The window was closed." "Anything else?" "Two black horses, harnessed to a rather solid-looking dark wagon, covered very well. He had little curtains. I could hardly see more than his hands when he was driving the wagon, and those were gloved." Sam just looked at him to see if there was more. "That's it." "Thanks, Gabe." He took out a half dollar and gave it to him. "So you know, the man's name is Richard Dunning, and he's an undertaker by trade, so he says. He may be ferreting around, trying to see if this is a good place to put down stakes." If you can get more information, I'd be interested. Well, thanks, Sam. He watched Gabe leave. He knew Gabe would be disappointed. Sam would have paid at least $1 if he'd brought truly fresh news. But he also knew Gabe would now be on the lookout for more information on Dunning. He now had extra eyes out. He drank a few more and had a meal at the Big Nugget. He spent most of the time thinking over everything he had learned about Richard Dunning. In the end, he came to one conclusion. Dunning was a question mark. He'd never met and talked with any stranger in town that stayed a question mark. That question mark would have to be erased. He paid and walked back to his house. He waited a couple of hours, then took a lantern and went back to the Big Nugget. He kept it shuttered until he was behind it and near Dunning's horses. They weren't too spooked by him, which was good. He gave him a once-over, but didn't see anything unusual about them. Then he turned his focus on the wagon. He looked at it from every angle. There were two large boxes on the back, but they were padlocked closed, and he didn't have any tools to open them. He wasn't even sure he would if he had them. He also finally decided what was wrong with the wagon. Its deck was too deep. There had to be some secret to it, a secret compartment. Certainly it couldn't be solid wood, or the wagon would be so heavy that two horses wouldn't move it. But its secret was destined to say so. Try as he might, Sam couldn't find any hint of an opening, lock, hinges, door, any other way into the wagon's base. He looked for the better part of an hour. When he thought he heard someone walking nearby, he decided it was time to close his lantern and take a circuitous route back home. A secret compartment built into a wagon didn't mean too much. Anyone with any wealth who wanted to make it alone through this empty land safely might do the same. Still, it told Sam that his new question mark had secrets. Back at his home, he cleaned his pistol, which was his habit, and went to sleep, still thinking on what he would need to do in the morning. The morning brought clouds and spits of rain. The desert saw rain only rarely, though this was the time of year it started. The sandy dirt was thrown up in little spurts by the large drops. He took his time with breakfast, knowing that the bankers kept banker's hours. His first stop were the few other places where a person new to town could find a bed that wasn't the Big Nugget. They weren't inns, just a few houses that had an extra room where, if a stranger asked around, they could find where there was a dry spot to rent. The owners of these places knew which side their bread was buttered on. They would all give Sam the information he asked for without expecting payment in return. He confirmed that no one else knew had come to town. Then he made his way to his employer, the First Western Bank. The manager was Fred Shaw. He was a big man, tall and overweight. Though he was never seen in public drunk, Sam had noticed over the years that Fred's nose was blooming with broken blood vessels. He suspected he was lonely and drank to get through the nights. But he greeted Sam with a hearty hello, one hand automatically going through his thinning hair. "Sam, on the case, I take it. This will be about Mr. Dunning, will it not?" "That's right, Fred." He took the seat across from Fred's desk. Fred's office, such as it was, had no full walls separating it from the rest of the bank. A half wall, about chest height, delineated it. Fred did not believe in blocking himself away from his employees or his clients. It did make Sam's work somewhat delicate, as he had to talk about some ticklish issues at times. "I understand you met him yesterday?" "Yes, he came by not too long before closing." "Yeah, I met him as well, at the Nugget," Fred nodded. "On top of it as usual, what do you want to know?" "Why did he come by here?" "To ask about the town. He let me know he's an undertaker, and he's seeing if Golden Lode has a spot for his business." "What exactly did you tell him?" "I let him know the population, the general situation. Maybe an undertaker could make it here if it were still the rush days. Lots of fights, fair number of deaths, more people. But if everyone lives their normal lives out, I don't think Golden Lode could handle a second one. John Manor does okay, but even he has his woodworking on the side to make ends meet." "That's roughly what I told him. Funny. He talked to me later than you, yet he asked me if we even had an undertaker." "Yeah. Maybe he thought I hadn't given him the straight poop." Sam shook his head. I'm not sure what's going on with Dunning, but I'm gonna keep an eye on him. You think he's up to something? I think he raises my hackles a bit, and until I'm sure about him, I'm gonna stay on him. Well, that's what we pay you for. Sam knew Fred was using we in a protective sense. The real owners of the bank lived in New York. They had decided that the local sheriff wasn't doing enough to protect their interests and had, through some contacts, hired Sam. When Sam rode into town, he was already a First Western employee. Still, he didn't argue the we, as he knew Fred must have been a little rankled at being told his job from people 2,000 miles away. Besides, Fred now treated him square, no matter how they had started. And I'm glad you do. Not to mention that I appreciate the help you give me, Fred. Unless there's anything else? Fred shook his head, so Sam rose and stretched his hand out over the desk to shake Fred's hand again. I'll keep you informed if there's anything more to Dunning. Thanks. And I doubt he'll have much business with us, but if he makes any big moves, I'll get you in on the loop. Thank you, Fred. When he left the bank, he turned in the direction of the big nugget. He saw, out of the corner of his eye, movement. He turned and saw a rat's tail disappear behind the nearest building, the general store. Sam thought back. He couldn't remember seeing a rat since the height of the gold rush. Then there were so many people, many camping right here in town, that there was food and trash everywhere. The rats had loved it. As the rush had subsided, the rats had found fewer and fewer pickings. Between that and the cats of the town, they had nearly been wiped out, though not, it seemed, entirely. He walked into the general store. It was owned by a family, the Robinsons, who had done extremely well for themselves during the rush, selling supplies to hopeful miners. That business of selling mostly simple mining and camping equipment gradually turned into the first general store in town. They'd become quite wealthy, but insisted on hiring no one outside their family members. They were respected in the town, but not loved. "Mrs. Robinson," he said as he entered, seeing it was she behind the counter. "Sam Lockhart," she said. Sam had always gotten the strong impression that she didn't much like him personally, but she approved of the bank having someone around specifically to watch for strangers and make sure any bad eggs left right away. So she put up with him. "What can I do for you?" "Just giving a heads up," Sam said. "I saw a rat behind your store a second ago. I also saw one near the Nugget the other night. Don't know if it's the same one." Her face turned sour. "The last thing we need," she said. "But, thank you. I'll make sure our cat's on the job, and I'll have my son find the old rat traps. Hopefully they haven't rusted away to nothing." "I wish I could bring you better news," Sam said. "Good day." "Good day," she said. He was already turning to go to the back room of the store. When he stepped outside, he heard her calling for her son to come help her. Sam then went straight to the big nugget. Tom Printon, who had always been a hard worker, was in the big front room, seeing to two guests who had wanted breakfast. He did not see Richard Dunning. "Tom, may I have a word?" he asked, and walked over to sit on the first stool at the bar. "Sure," he replied in his gravel but friendly voice. "Be right there." Soon he finished up and walked up to Sam. "What can I do for you this fine morning, Sam?" Sam leaned forward conspiratorially. He didn't want to say what he had to say out loud so it would carry to the guests. Tom took the hint and leaned forward in return. "Yesterday evening, I saw a rat in your stable, and then, just a few minutes ago, I saw one behind the general store."
"Damnation," Tom said in a whisper. "We haven't had to worry about those for a while. I was wondering what the secrecy was about, but thank you."
"Of course," Sam said. "Has Richard Dunning come down?"
"He did," Tom said, straightening up a bit and bringing his voice to normal level. "First thing this morning. Had another cup of tea, then left a while ago." "Did he say where he was going? Talk to you at all?"
"Nothing beyond the pleasantries," Tom said.
"So he's out and about already," Sam thought. "Man likes to keep busy."
The rain started up again, and Sam considered what to do. He didn't want to wander around looking for Dunning in the wet. It was really too early for lunch, but he had time now and might be very busy the rest of the day, depending on what happened. He asked Tom for eggs and toast and a pour-over coffee. Most people made coffee with percolators,
but they burned the coffee rather badly and got even worse when allowed to sit on the stove. Tom had picked up the trick of pouring hot water over the beans, making coffee that took more work, but tasted a hell of a lot better. Sam, having seen him do it and tasting the difference, had even started doing it at home when he felt like taking the extra time and effort. It was details like that that kept the big nugget going through good times and bad. Other full ends had opened during their rush, but none of them had survived the post-rush crash, other than Tom and his nugget. He hadn't been the cheapest place in town, but he'd always been the cleanest. Sam knew that Tom would be glad for the information about the rats, even if he didn't want to hear it. And given how many new people in town came through the nugget, and therefore how important the nugget was to Sam's job, he was happy to help him in any way he could. If Dunning was true to his word, he'd be stopping by John Manor to talk shop. Though it wasn't always a bad idea to let people know he had an eye on them, that didn't apply here. Dunning knew Sam and his business already. No, he wanted to get as much information as he could from John Manor, and that could only be done by letting him have his talk. He might just go there later, but he suspected that Gabe would be tailing Dunning, and hopefully would come by the Big Nugget sometime and give a report. Sam settled down to wait. Gabe reported to him a little more than an hour later. It was getting towards noon when he saw the man enter. He noticed that his limp seemed a little more pronounced. "Hi, Gabe. News? Sam?" "Yeah." Dunning went to see Mannard. They spent the better part of 2 hours together. "Did you hear any of it?" "Some, yes," he said. He looked away when he said this, and Sam suspected he was holding something embarrassing back. He met Mannard in his wood shop, not in his house, and his shop is pretty open to the air. "Good. What did they discuss?" Well, at first, Dunning was asking Mannard about how long he'd been in town, how the business was. Mannard played it straight, as far as I can tell. Said the business for undertaking had gone way down since the end of the rush a few years back. Things had settled down in the town, and they didn't look to him to be a big pickup in the number of people moving here, which would make his undertaking full-time. Then they fell to talking about things like what made people move into town now that the rush was over, what made them leave, were there any health issues. Then they started talking lower. At least, I couldn't hear him any longer. It was like Dunning was buzzing quieter and quieter. And then I was asleep outside his window, sitting down. I'm a little ashamed to admit it. I don't know how it happened. I take helping you serious, you know? I know. Did you hear anything after you woke up? Nothing of importance. I woke up because a rat scurried over my leg. They were just saying their goodbyes. Sam sat up a little straighter. A rat, you say? Yeah. Little vermin scared the crud out of me. Almost yelled out before I remembered where I was and how embarrassing it would be to get caught listening in on their talk. Anything else? Just that I went over to the church and asked Parson Smith for the time. That's how I know for sure he was there for 2 hours. And you were asleep for how long? Don't know for sure, but most of it. Maybe an hour and a half, based on what I heard before and after I slept. What on earth could they have had to talk about for that long? And you say that Dunning's voice was getting quiet before you fell asleep? Yeah, I could hardly hear him. But after I woke up, they were talking normal enough. Thanks, Gabe. Sam took a dollar out of his pocket and gave it to him. Keep at it. If you find out anything else interesting, let me know. Will do. Thanks, Sam. Gabe got up and left. Sam figured he was going to the little boarding house he lived in to sleep, maybe pay his landlady. That meant it would be time to go see John Manor. But that would have to wait until afternoon. He'd seen the announcement on the church sign earlier. There was a funeral today. Manor would be busy. He took a stroll around the town, trying to find out if anyone else knew had come to town. No one had. He also kept his eye out for anything unusual. Here he had a bit more luck. Out of the last few houses on the north side of town, he spotted another rat. This one scurried behind a house and out of sight. When Sam went around the corner, it had gone. Sam knocked, but no one was home. He knew the occupant slightly. It was a single man who worked one of the mines. He undoubtedly was away working. Not having anything else going on, he eventually went back to John Mannard's home and shop. He waited outside on the porch, which had a comfortable enough bench and enough of an overhang to keep the warm fall sun off of him. Eventually, Mannard came back to his home. Sam stood up and watched him walk towards him. John Mannard was tall and lean, clean-shaven, and with a serious look on his face. All the time, not just because he saw Sam waiting for him. "Sam Lockhart, how are you this afternoon?" John said. He and Sam shook hands. "Come on in." John opened the door and Sam followed. They each put their hat on the hat stand near the door. "Coffee?" John offered. "I'll rewarm it." "Thank you," Sam replied. John put his percolator on the stove. Sam didn't care that it would taste burnt. He had accepted it merely as a way of ingratiating himself. "Not to be rude, but I suppose this is about Mr. Dunning," John said. John had been in the town a long time and knew Sam's business. Knew it well, since on three occasions it had led to him getting paid for a casket. "You are quite right. I understand you've spoken with him." "Him, with Gabe listening in at the window?" "Right. Do you know if Mr. Dunning knew that Gabe was listening in?" "I don't know either way. He didn't make it known, but he may have just not said anything." John sat down at the chair closest to the stove. He reached down and scratched his calf. "Mr. Dunning, I think, was playing his cards close to the chest." "Did that apply to the things you talked about?" "Oh, yes," John said. "He wanted to know all about the town, its history, and so on. He didn't answer too much about himself, though I asked." "What did he say?" "He was making his way across the country, looking for his town where his services were needed. He said he thought Goldenlode might be such a town. I told him that I was only part-time and had to do woodworking in addition. He didn't seem too put off by that, though." "I imagine if you and he have to split your business here between you, that would leave little to make a living on." "You have that right. I mean, I'm not one to tell a man not to do his work, but here there just isn't much work to go around." "Has there been any pickup in your work? Anything unusual?" "Nothing you don't know about yourself. We had a funeral today. That was just old Mr. Adam Habert from a heart attack. Nothing out of the way." Sam paused. "I always hear about how dirty it is working in the mines. Any chance there'll be a spate of lung diseases killing the miners?" John considered this, scratching just below his knee. "You might need to see one of the mine doctors for that, and maybe they're hiding it if it's true. But, well, I've seen a few with coughs and other problems. Nothing suggests to me there's going to be a load of miners dying off anytime soon." Sam nodded. "How did Dunning strike you?" John got up and poured the coffee while he answered. "Professional. Right comportment for an undertaker. Didn't show much emotion. I had to learn my coolness the hard way. People don't want their undertaker showing a lot of emotion. Not before the funeral, not at it, not afterwards. They're in mourning, you see, and they need someone nearby who can be in charge. Let them feel whatever they need to feel. They can't do that if their undertaker is showing too much sadness or anything else. Their pastor can be warm and kindly, but not the undertaker. Besides, just a hint of any emotion is more than enough. If you're in mourning and I give you just a tiny bit of sympathy, they'll remember it like I gave you the full hug. Every emotion is ramped up. So that's another reason we have to be taciturn. Any emotion they see is multiplied tenfold or more. Anyway, Dunning is like that. He shows very little of what he's thinking or feeling. He'll do well when he finds the right town." "You figure he'll move on?" "He never said so. But you know, if he and I have to split the undertaking business, I hope he has a second way of making money." Sam drank his coffee. It hadn't been heated too much, and it wasn't all that bad. They drank some more while he thought of how best to ask his next questions. "John," he finally said, "I've been concerned with him. I can't put my finger on it. I'm trying to convince myself it's not just a connection with undertaking. But I've never gotten a strange feeling off of you, and I have with him from the first moment. Do you understand what I mean? You're asking if I get that same feeling? Yes. People in our profession don't usually say bad things about anyone. We tend to take the speak no ill of the dead concept and apply it broadly. Still, he said, taking a drink from his mug, I know what you mean. There's something odd there. Did anything unusual happen during your talk? This was the question Sam had really wanted to ask, and felt this was the right time for it, just after John had made his little concession. John thought about that. No, I wouldn't say so, other than Gabe was listening in. Did the meeting go fast? Yes. I was surprised later on to see how long we had talked. Didn't feel that long at all. Sam finished his coffee. Thanks, John. I think it's time to get back to it. Sam went back to the Nugget. Tom greeted him and brought him some coffee. Sam took out a pad of paper and a pencil and flipped pages until he got to the end. He wrote down everything he could remember from this day. Caught up, he reread it and everything from the previous days, and even before. He then went back and leafed through the entire pad. But he saw nothing that would explain why he was still feeling strange about Richard Dunning. The evening came, and the dinner and later drinking crowds came to the Nugget. Sam waited, but got no new information from Gabe or anyone else. Sam had his dinner and a beer, and made light conversation with a number of town folk. He wasn't outgoing by nature, but it was important that he stay on good terms with the people of Golden Lode. He couldn't do his work if everyone was against him. He went home, kicking off his boots by the door and deciding not to have any more coffee. He felt dried out, so he got some water from his barrel and just drank that and listened to the night insects. After a while, he heard someone or something moving outside. His neighbors were too far away from him to hear their footsteps, so he went and picked up his pistol and stood near the door. There was a soft knock. Sam opened the door. The night was dark, but the small amount of light from his single candle near the stove revealed a young woman he wasn't acquainted with. May I help you? He asked. May I come in? It's getting chilly, she replied. He was a little surprised, but his manners took over. Please. He stepped back and then shut the door once she had entered. Is this about Richard Dunning? Sam asked. Often his helpers around town themselves asked for information, and sometimes it came directly to him. No, sir, I'm from Madame Lorraine's. The brothel? Sam thought. How may I help you? She moved a little bit towards him. It's really how I'd like to help you, she said. She was short, quite thin, and with a sharp-nosed face. Her eyes were looking at him with what was probably meant to be seduction, but seemed put on to Sam. Her dress was designed to show off what curves her underfed frame had. Prostitution was allowed in Golden Lode, but only happened in the brothel, or so Sam understood. This was new to him. I'm not a patron of Madame Lorraine's. She knows. But she likes the way you help keep things quiet around here. We've seen more than a few men with bad intentions move out of town because of you. I saw you this evening at the Nugget, she said. Sam flashed back. He'd gone to most of the tables at one point or another, keeping up his friendly ties. He hadn't been to a table with her at it. She must have been at the bar. But he didn't recall her being there. Then he snapped back as she continued. Something I saw tonight. You have a wedding ring. Yes, Sam said, I do. Well, she said, taking another step towards him. You've been in town a long time, not to have called her for her to join you. Did she pass? Yes, said Sam. She passed. Then let me take her place tonight. I don't even know your name. She smiled. That's the idea. You don't have to. Sam looked rueful. You're very kind, miss, but I'm not looking for that right now. She smiled wider, despite his words. Well, maybe you'll feel different some night. Sam didn't respond to that, but did have a thought. Would Madame Lorraine be upset if you had a second income? She looked him up and down. I thought you weren't interested. Not in that. In buying information. She considered this. What kind of thing do you want to know? Well, Sam said, relaxing enough to point her to a chair and sitting down in the next one. My job with the bank is to make sure that any new people in town are decent folk. If they're not, I make sure they move along. She nodded. That's more or less what I heard about you. I didn't realize you were with the bank, though. I thought you were with Sheriff Tuggard. Sam shrugged. I don't think the bank or the sheriff wants it widely known. It's not really a secret, though, either. So what do you want, Sam? May I call you Sam? Since you've already asked to go to bed with me, I suppose we're past formality, Sam said. Sure. What do I call you? Daisy. Okay, Daisy. I don't have any contact at Madame Lorraine's. Do men ever actually spend the night there? Hardly ever. It's a lot more than a room at the Big Nugget. Right. If they did, I'd cotton on a while ago that new people in town were slipping by me somehow. Still, I'll bet that some men hit the town and make a beeline for Madame Lorraine's, don't they? Oh, yeah, they do. Most of them smell of sweat, dust, horses, or all three. Sam nodded. Well, when someone new to town, not just someone coming back after a spell, but someone actually new, comes into Lorraine's, if you're able to tell me about them, I can pay you. She looked interested. How much? Yeah, if it's really basic information, like a single stranger came in, no one knows him, big beard and dark brown hat, then a quarter. But I'll pay up to $1 for good information, like if you have a getting-to-know-you conversation and learn his name, where he's from, how's he earn his pay, and so on. Maybe more, if he's got enough grit to let you know he's an outlaw. She nodded. Easy money. Talking's half the job. But don't you go broke in your line of work, giving out money like that? The bank defrays my costs, usually. They won't kick up a fuss if you pay me or my friends? Not if it's for information instead of for your other services. But no, I'd rather just pay you. I don't want everyone at Lorraine's running over to the Nugget every time someone new is in town. I can't pay everyone if they all try to tell me at once. But if you make an arrangement with your friends for them to tell you to tell me, I'm happy to let your pay go part their way. I suppose Madame Lorraine will be wanting a cut either way. You suppose, right, she said. Okay, I'll be your little liaison. She added that sentence with a wicked grin, which Sam chuckled at. You're as bright as your name, Sam said. And since you had the gut to leave Lorraine's place and try your hand here, you got gumption, too. I think we'll be good business partners. She took this as a dismissal, started to rise, then sat back down. Anything else before I go, partner? Sam smiled. Absolutely. There's a new man in town, name of Richard Dunning. He's an undertaker. Pale, light-colored hair, sunken eyes, black clothes. He's trying to decide now if he's going to stay or not. Normally, I'd have made a decision on someone by now, and he'd be welcome to stay, or I'd have convinced him to move on. But I'm in a quandary with him. Something about him seems off, but I haven't figured out what yet. If you find something out about him, I'll be glad to pay you, even though he's been in town a few days now. Is he likely to visit Madame Lorraine's? Daisy asked. Sam considered this. I don't think so, he said. But you never know. Even if you just spot him doing something when you're out and about, I'll pay for a report. Along the same lines, a quarter if it's just a when and where you saw him, more if you can let me know what he was doing. Daisy smiled and rubbed her hands together in a parody of greed. I'll be sure to do that then, Sam. Thanks. I'll be thanking you if you bring me anything juicy on him. Great. I'll be getting along back to Madame Lorraine's. Then I'll see you out. It's dark. You want me to walk you back? She glanced at him. My, my, what would people say about us? But no. Thank you. I can take care of myself. Good night. One question. You always call Madame Lorraine Madame Lorraine. Why is that? She laughed. Habit. Madame Lorraine does not want her or her establishment to be called anything other than Madame Lorraine and Madame Lorraine's. She thinks it gives it a bit of class. Sam nodded. I see. Good night, then, Daisy of Madame Lorraine's. He pulled out a quarter and handed it to her, to formalize our partnership. She took it, laughing again, turned, and was swallowed almost immediately by the night. Sam shut the door and prepared for bed. The next morning, he decided it was time to bring Sheriff Tuggard in on the situation. He rarely needed to. These situations normally resolve themselves before bringing the actual law into the picture, something which suited both him and Sheriff George Tuggard quite well. When he stepped outside, he saw that it would be a clear day, though it was quite cold still, with the sun just hovering over the horizon. Sheriff Tuggard was not known for being particularly effusive in his efforts to combat the criminal element. Though most people would be hard at work around this time, Sheriff Tuggard was not likely to be in his little jailhouse next to the post office. If you were lucky, one of his part-time deputies might be there, though. He set off. When he arrived, he knocked and opened the door without waiting for a reply. "Morning," he said. Only one person was there. He looked up, unconcerned. It was Bill Mullaney, one of the deputies. He was young, with straw-colored hair and a weak mustache he refused to trim. "Hey, Sam," he said. "George isn't in yet. Any idea when he'll be by?" Bill waited a moment, as though thinking, but Sam could tell. He didn't know. "I don't think it'll be too long," he replied. "Well, I better get along," Sam said. "I'm going to make a few inquiries, then I'll be at the Nugget. Would you let him know I'd like to talk with him? If you can't come by, I'll try here again later on." "I'll let him know," Bill said. "Bye then, Bill," he said, and left while Bill said goodbye behind him. Sam had only walked a few paces when he heard a noise. He'd become attuned to it, the sound of the movement of a rat. He turned and saw a tail go under the jailhouse between the floorboard and the dirt. "The rats are making a comeback," Sam thought. He made his rounds, seeing if anyone new was in town. He found a new man at one of the boarding houses, the Widow Joslin's place. He got permission from her to go up, and did so. He knocked on the door.
"Who is it?"
the man said from inside, sounding surly.
"Name's Sam Lockhart," Sam replied through the door. "Think of me as the welcoming committee. Open the door, please."
A few seconds later, a man opened the door, wearing long johns. He had a full beard and mustache and was looking at Sam through bleary eyes.
"You want to come in?"
he slurred. "Certainly," Sam said, and stepped in as the man stepped to one side. "Again, I'm Sam Lockhart. You are?"
"Frank. Frank Tillman."
"Good to meet you, Mr. Tillman. I'm an employee of the bank here in town. That bank and the three mines around Golden Lode all want the town to be a peaceful and prosperous one. My job is to determine if strangers in town mean any trouble, and if so, convince them to move along." Sam took a moment to look around. There was an empty whiskey bottle on the bedside table. "You're a drinker, Mr. Tillman." It was a statement.
"Yeah. Will that be a problem for you or the bank?"
Sam waited a moment. Frank Tillman wasn't exactly looking at him. He was looking a little below him, as though ashamed.
"No, sir. I don't think it will. You a miner?" "I'm going to look for work at the mine starting today."
Not exactly an answer to the question, Sam thought.
"Very well, Mr. Tillman. I wish you luck.
And though I tend to come across as tough, I'd like you to know that I don't cause problems for people who haven't caused the town or the bank any problems. I think we'll get along just fine."
"Okay," Mr. Tillman said.
"Good day," Sam said. He opened the door and headed out, barely hearing the mumbled "good day" of Frank Tillman as he closed the door. Sam got back to the Nugget and wrote up a short report on Frank Tillman. It boiled down to
no problems anticipated unless he is a mean drunk or is lying about his work. As a courtesy, he wrote a second copy for Sheriff Tuggard. Shortly after he finished, Sheriff Tuggard entered the Nugget. After waving to Tom, he came over to Sam. "Morning, Sam," he said, sitting down across from him as Sam waved a hand at the chair by way of invitation. "What you got for me?" "Report on a new guy," Sam said, handing the extremely short report to him, and something else. Tuggard scanned the report. "Seems like no trouble." "I agree." "So what is the other issue, Sam? I got things to do." "Sure you do," Sam thought. But aloud, he said, "The other situation is Richard Dunning. You met him yet?" "I have not," Tuggard replied. "Well, he's a strange one. I've never seen someone who has taken me so long to make up my mind about." Sheriff Tuggard nodded in a way that indicated interest. "What's the holdup?" "That's just it. I got a feeling like something's wrong, but I haven't found anything to pin it on." "He's an undertaker. Says he's looking at Golden Lode to see if this is where he should put down stakes." "And he hasn't done anything strange?" "Not so you'd think. He's checked in with the bank, our undertaker, a few other places. I keep thinking he'll decide to move on all by himself. That's pretty much what the banker and the undertaker told him anyway. Not enough business here for him." "If he stays, are you going to try to change his mind?" "I don't see how I can without some reason behind it." "Never stopped you before." "Hey now," Sam looked him in the eye. "I always have a reason." "Yeah, yeah, Sam," Sheriff Tuggard said. "Look, we both know you're more or less untouchable by me and my deputies. I don't get in the bank's way, and you've played it straight, near as I can tell. If you decide to run him out of town on a rail, I won't get in your way. In the meantime, if you send me some information on this Dunning, I'll see what I can scare up on my end." "All right then, Sheriff. I'll send you some reports by the end of the day." Sheriff Tuggard stood up. "Have a good day then, Sam." He turned and walked out of the Nugget. Sam watched him go, then saw a movement over by the stairs. Richard Dunning was on the bottom step and was looking at Sam. Sam suspected that he heard a great deal of their conversation. He cursed himself a fool for not being more careful. Dunning turned away from him and walked out of the Nugget. On what business? Sam didn't know. The next few days were quiet. Sam knew he had shown his hand. All he could really do is keep an eye out and hope that his informers would scare up something. He kept checking for new people in town. Some came. None were any threat. Late on Sunday night, nearly a week since Richard Dunning's arrival, he thought he heard footsteps outside his house. He waited a moment, expecting a knock, but none came. "Daisy?" he asked, thinking she might have returned. But there was no answer, and he heard no more footsteps. He pulled on his boots and threw on his heavy coat and opened the door, holding his pistol in his hand. "Anyone out there?" he asked. There was no reply. He walked out and listened hard, but there was no sound. He walked around his house, but saw nothing. He went back to bed. Next morning, there was nothing new and no one in town. Sam decided it was time to have another talk with Dunning. He camped out and waited. When midday came and Dunning had not shown himself, Sam went to Tom and asked him if he had been down earlier. "Haven't seen him all day, Sam." "He hasn't eaten?" "He had food sent up to him first thing this morning." "I see. Does he have any further such arrangements?" "No." "Tom, you know that though I stay in your dining hall a lot, I try to keep my real business away from the Nugget as much as possible." Tom looked a little nervous. "What are you saying, Sam?" "With your permission, I'd like to go up and have a chat with him. Now." Tom sighed. "Sure, Sam. You've always done square by me." Sam went upstairs. He knew which room Dunning had. He knocked. There was no answer.
Sam was about to knock again when he heard Dunning from inside. "Are you visiting me, Sam Lockhart?" "Yes, Mr. Dunning. I'd like you to open the door." Another long pause. "Very well." The wait was longer than he was expecting, but Dunning opened the door. "Please enter." Dunning stepped back and gestured for Sam to come in. Sam waited just a moment before doing so. "I think it's time you moved on from Golden Lode," Sam said. He was looking Dunning right in the eyes, and Dunning was holding his ground. "That's not your decision to make," Dunning said. "Nevertheless, I am making it," Sam replied. "Last I checked, it's a free country. Man can make his living when and where he pleases. And I haven't made up my mind about this town yet." "That no longer matters. And if I refuse," Sam smiled, "nobody refuses me once I make up my mind. But I have business here already. You have until next Sunday to wrap it up and leave town." "I see. Well, perhaps by then you'll have changed your mind. Don't count on it." "Unless there's anything else, Mr. Lockhart?" "No, nothing." Sam opened the door and left, neither man saying goodbye. Sam kept his eye out for Dunning, but found nothing for a few days. Dunning kept to his room and had his meals brought up to him. Whatever business he was wrapping up, Sam thought, it didn't take a lot of talking over. On Wednesday, John Mannard, the undertaker, and Doc Sullivan fell ill. Both had some sort of pox. Panic gripped the town. By Thursday, there were 25 cases. Most of them were severe. On Friday, Sam started to feel ill. He went to Doc Sullivan, who was now gravely ill himself. He couldn't see him as a patient, but confirmed that some poxes could be spread by rats. "There's rats all over town," Sam said. "I've seen them." "Well, they come and go. That's just how it is in towns," Doc said. "Not this time," Sam said. "Get better, Doc." He bundled himself back up and walked back home. He spent the latter part of Friday in bed. He found several flea bites on his legs. "Damnation," he said aloud. Saturday, he had a terrible fever. He drank water and got down as much food as he could stomach. He stayed in bed and did his best to keep his stove fire going strong. He wondered if he'd be seeing his wife again soon. He drifted in and out of sleep, having various dreams that made little sense even to him. He did recognize a number of men he'd run out of town and the three he'd shot dead. He also saw the glassy eyes of his wife, as he had seen them when he had returned the home that awful day. No one could tell him why she had died. The thoughts of her, while regular, had become less frequent over the intervening few years. But something about this awful sickness had made him almost obsess about her, living and dead. Sunday came, and with it a knock at the door. "I'm sick, can't come to the door," Sam called out from his bed. "A shame," came a voice, and Sam could tell it was Richard Dunning. "I was hoping I could get your go-ahead to stay in town." "Nothing has changed," Sam croaked. "Hasn't it?" Richard said. "I'd beg to differ. The warm and humane undertaker, John Mannard, died overnight, so I'm told. This town requires my services. I'll be saying." Sam didn't say anything. He was in shock. "I'll take your silence as consent," Richard said. "Good day and good health, Mr. Lockhart." He listened to his footsteps quickly fade away, and soon fell back into another feverish sleep full of uncomfortable dreams, full of dead men, rats, and his wife. The next day, the pustules started to form on his skin.
He did his best to stay healthy. He brought water and food next to his bed so he wouldn't have to get out of bed, and put his old chamber pot, which he never used unless the weather kept him out of the outhouse, by the bed as well. But there was little he could do. He bundled up, put wood on the stove every so often, and rested as best he could. 2 days in, Tom came to check on him. He was clearly afraid for his own health and didn't stay long, but did bring some clean water and a warm meal. Meanwhile, Sam, when not sleeping or in too much pain, thought about everything that had happened. And he realized one thing. Somehow, some way, Richard Dunning was at the back of it. The rats had come back. True, the amount of rats in a town might go up and down over time. One could argue that they were due for a boom in rats. But the first rat he had seen was the night Dunning came to town, and he'd seen more rats since that day than since he had before he'd come to town. It wasn't coincidence. The rats had brought the disease with them. And Dunning must have brought the rats. How? And how did he get them all around the town? And it came to him. The wagon. He knew something about it was strange. Now he knew what it must be. He just hadn't known what to look for before. He wrote down his suspicions for Sheriff Tuggard. He put it in an envelope and closed it. He didn't put a name on the envelope. If he died in the night, he wanted it discovered by Sheriff Tuggard, and if he put the sheriff's name on it, he was afraid that Dunning might take it somehow. He could smell the pustules bursting under the covers. His fever was getting worse. Even waking, he was delirious now. His thoughts swirled of his wife, of Dunning, of Gabe, of Tom, of Daisy. Especially of Daisy. Part of him, a part he had not acknowledged since his wife's death, realized he was lonely. What would it be like to be with her? While the thought kept coming back, he realized that he was simply too old for her. And though he didn't begrudge anyone the way they made their living, he knew that her profession would make things complicated. Even in his dreams, he never thought of just paying her. He was in pain, and the breaking pustules stank. He was finding it difficult even to get out of bed to stoke the fire now. He ate and drank as best he could, but that too was very strenuous. He even lost track of time. It was hard for him to tell what day it was. A part of him realized he might well die. But he just didn't have it in him to give up. He kept the fire stoked. He kept drinking water and eating the simple food he could keep near his bed. The bed was filthy, but he had no way to get his sheets cleaned. One bright, cold morning, the fire had nearly gone out, and the chill had invaded his room before he struggled out of bed and stoked it. Daisy came. As soon as he saw the door open, he held up a hand and croaked, "Wait!" She stood there, framed with the bright daylight behind her. "I wanted to check on you, Sam," she said. She shut the door behind her. "No information?" he asked, though he didn't want to crawl out of bed to get her any money. "No," he said. "Stay by the door. I'm very sick," Sam said. She nodded. "You look it. Doc Sullivan is sick too, though." "Damn," Sam muttered. "How's Sheriff Tuggard? Also sick? His deputies, too." "How many people are sick in all of Goldenload?" "No idea. Dozens, at least. Scores, probably." "Then I've got to get the information to someone. Maybe the bank." "What information?" "In the envelope." He pointed at it on the table near his bed. She clearly didn't want to come in, and he couldn't blame her. He picked it up and spun it towards the door. She picked it up off the floor. "Thank you. Perhaps the bank, then, or if they've assigned someone trustworthy to serve while the sheriff and his men are sick, please deliver it to them. Or maybe the mayor." They both knew the mayor was a figurehead. He had essentially been appointed by the bank and the mines and was good for nothing. She nodded. "Will you need anything?" "I should be fine. I have water and food and wood for some more days. I don't want you or anyone to get what I have."
Okay, Sam. She left. He went back to his pain and his delirium. By the end of the day, he could hardly remember the details. Several times, he looked at his table, then panicked because the envelope was missing, only to remember that he had given it to Daisy. That night was the worst. He could hardly sleep from being semi-conscious all day, and his body ached just from lying down too much, let alone the pustules along his thighs and elsewhere. The fever was intense, and he could hardly reach over to occasionally get a drink of water. But the next morning, his fever broke. It did not go away immediately, but Sam could tell the worst was over. He was still very careful, but it felt good to be drinking and eating regularly and keeping the fire going. He even took a bit of extra water and a rag and cleaned himself before getting back in bed. The pustules hurt like crazy, but they too were getting better. Some were bruised almost black, but they were all less swollen, and no more of them burst. But he was afraid of a possible relapse, so he stayed in bed as much as possible and took care of himself. One more day, and then late the next morning, Daisy knocked on the door. She did so hesitantly, as though afraid she was knocking on the door of a dead man. But Sam's somewhat hearty, "Hello," had her opening the door with a half-hopeful smile. "Sam," she said, "I'm glad you're feeling strong." She saw the one big pustule on his neck and winced. "It's okay, Daisy," Sam said. "I think I'm past the worst of it. I think I'll pull through." "That's great," Daisy said. "Listen, Sam," and she stepped inside to close the door. "The whole town is just turned upside down. I haven't been able to find anyone who's in charge. The mayor is sick, the sheriff's sick, the bank is closed. Parson Roscoe is sick too. So I decided to go to the Nugget and see Tom. He's okay so far," she said to Sam's change of expression. "And I know Dunning stays in Tom's room, so I was very careful." He opened the envelope and read it. Well, you should have seen his face. He was really angry. I think he would have thrown Dunning out right then and there, but something you wrote gave him pause. He called Johnny and Gabe, and they seemed to be in Tom's main room all the time now, watching for Dunning. But he still stays in his room. Tell Tom not to make a move. Give me another day to get stronger. I think I can come to the Nugget tomorrow, the way things are going. I won't be 100%, but I'll be strong enough to come. He shouldn't try to go against Dunning without me." "Why?" "The man has a plan, and while we figured some of it out, I don't think we know it all yet. Dunning's dangerous, and you'll need me, both for what I can do and for the official license it'll give the situation. I'm not the law, but if anyone can stir up trouble and not get hanged for it, it's me. I don't want Tom, or Gabe, or Johnny, for that matter, in the Jusco." "Okay. I'll check on you again tonight and make sure you're still on the mend. And I'll let Tom know you say to sit tight." "That's right. Sit tight." His energy wasn't fully back, Sam could tell. Even this conversation was wearying. He took a moment to collect his thoughts, then continued. "We haven't confirmed yet that Dunning is doing it, but I'm telling you that the rats are behind the disease, and we need to make sure the word gets out right. It's not Tom's fault, but if the Nugget is seen as the cause, or the center, or anything like that, it could ruin Tom. So you may need to let people know to kill any rats they see, and put out traps if they got them. But don't bring the Nugget, or Tom, or even Dunning in on the conversation. Just say that the rats are bringing the disease. Let people know that much. Maybe we can stop this from getting worse." "Okay. See you this evening then, Sam." "Thanks, Daisy." She shut the door. Sam laid back on his bed. The conversation had taken some energy out of him, and he hoped he'd be strong enough to follow up on his promise the next day. He felt weak, but not feverish, the next morning. He decided that he could go ahead with his plan to visit the Nugget and get to the bottom of the Dunning situation. After breakfast, he took some time to prepare. He cleaned his pistol and made sure that it was in perfect working order. He loaded it and put it carefully in its holster.
He thought about anything else he might need to bring, but if he needed any tools, Tom would have them with the Nugget. He was concerned that just doing this much did leave him somewhat tired, but at least he was not slipping back into fever. He ate and drank, and planned to go out at noon. Until then, he rested, not in bed, but at his kitchen table, writing more notes about what he knew, had seen, and suspected about all that had gone on since the arrival of Richard Dunning in Goldenlode. The walk over there was chilly, despite the sun being high in the sky. When he arrived, he took a moment, partly to confer with Tom, Gabe, and Johnny, and partly to warm himself. Daisy had played her part well. They had kept an eye out, but had not tried to apprehend Dunning. When he had rested, he led Johnny out to look again at Dunning's wagon. The wagon still struck him as unusual, and now he had a theory to work on. If Dunning was responsible for the rats around Goldenlode, they may well have been hidden in the wagon. The base of the wagon had seemed oddly thick, and sure enough, after a few minutes of looking, Sam found a small hidden catch in the underneath. He banged on the wagon's bottom and thought he heard a few noises. He had Johnny stand well back and pop the catch open. A door fell down and several rats fell out. Sam swore, thrust the door back up, and fiddled with the catch until it caught. The rats were already scurrying out of sight. "Stay here," he ordered Johnny. "Don't let anyone at this wagon. If Dunning comes down and tries to hitch his horses to it, run and get us." Johnny nodded, looking scared, and Sam went back into the Nugget. After checking the room to make sure no one was close enough to hear, he told Tom and Gabe, still in a low voice, what Dunning's wagon was full of. Tom swore with a yell. The few people who were at the bar all looked over, and he put on a false smile and a little wave to say, "Excuse me." They kept looking. Sam ignored them, talking more in the same undertone. "The lawmen are all out of commission. I'm the next best thing. We have to apprehend Dunning, right now." "Gabe?" he asked, and Gabe nodded. "Dunning in his room?" "Well, yeah, he hasn't been out of his room for days and days." That brought Sam up short. "You mean you haven't followed him going anywhere? No one else has seen him leave?" Gabe shook his head. "Was I the last one to talk with him or see him? That was, what, a week ago?" Gabe nodded agreement. "Then he's up to something. Let's go. Tom, get your shotgun." Tom grabbed a shotgun, not seeming to care very much that his customers were still watching him, and the three of them went up the stairs. "Key," Sam whispered. Tom passed it to him. Sam put the key in the lock, nodded tersely so that Gabe and Tom would know he was planning on moving immediately, and pushed the door open. Well, he tried to push the door open, but there was something slowing it down. There was a mass of movement all across the floor, and some pained animal cries. Sam gaped. The floor of the room was crawling with rats. They were so thick he couldn't really see the floor. They writhed and twisted in their hundreds, and there was a horrible squeaking. Some dozen were already scrambling past the men. Tom gave a yell that clearly told Sam he did not want his customers seeing multiple rats pouring down the stairs. "Fire!" Tom yelled. "Fire!" He ran down the stairs, clearly intent on clearing everyone out of the building before any rats were seen. Sam paid only a fraction of his attention to that. He was still looking for Dunning. He closed the door behind him to keep the rats in. He saw there was a small armoire. He waded through the rats, shaking his legs to get some of them to let go. He yanked it open, pistol in his other hand, but it didn't hold Dunning, only some clothing. There was no other room. Sam looked at the bed and wondered if Dunning was hiding under it. He wasn't about to bend down to the rat-filled floor to check, so he snagged a corner of the mattress and yanked up. His illness was forgotten, the rush of the moment making all bad feelings flee for the time being. But while a large number of rats flipped up and smacked against the wall with light thuds, there was no man under the bed. Had Dunning been eaten by the rats? Sam wondered. But there was no sign of a body, as there surely would be, even if this swarm of rats ate him entirely. He left the room and closed the door. There were still a few dozen rats in the hall.
Gabe had backed down the stairs, his face pale. On some level, Sam was concerned as well, but he had already gotten whatever disease these things had, and he suspected he couldn't get anything else. His concerns were for Tom, for the town, and for the future. But most of all, his concern was to find out where the hell Dunning was and make him pay. He knew Tom would be no use. While he had no doubt that Tom wanted Dunning strung up, he couldn't be expected to think about that while hundreds of vermin were squirming in one of his rooms. He would be figuring out how to kill the rats in that room without damaging his hotel. He went back to check on Johnny and Dunning's wagon. "No one's been out here," Johnny simply said when he saw him come around the side of the building. Sam nodded and sized up the wagon. There was an open area out behind the hotel, flat and free of anything that anyone would miss. He and Johnny pulled the wagon to that spot, then started carrying some of the firewood Tom had stacked out back under it. When they had a good start on it, Sam asked Johnny to go in, let Tom know what they were doing out back, and bring back any news, plus some lamp oil, or cooking oil if there wasn't a nice big jar. Johnny came back. No news about Dunning, but Tom was closing the hotel to the public until the rats had been taken care of. He was planning on cutting a hole in the door, blowing smoke into the room with a bellows and some pipes he had, and then hopefully moving in to kill the rats. He'd also come with a big jug of kerosene. "Use it all," Tom says, Johnny relayed to him. He'd also brought matches. Sam kept bringing wood, and it nearly came up to the underside of the wagon. He splashed the kerosene liberally all over the wood, and even some on the wagon itself. After making sure he wasn't coated in the stuff himself, he struck a match and lit the wood, which almost immediately became a bonfire. Sam realized he was exhausted. The roaring of the bonfire kept any squeaking of rats from being heard, but he had no doubt they would be dead very soon, and would not be able to escape. He left Johnny to watch the bonfire, asking him not to answer questions, since he saw people looking in on the odd sight of a wagon being purposefully set on fire. He also gave him a dollar coin. Sam went inside, where Tom had solicited Gabe's help. They were almost feverishly preparing to smoke the rats in the room. "There weren't any rat holes in the walls, I'm certain," Tom said. "At least," he said, his voice falling, "there weren't any before that scoundrel rented the room. I think we'll be able to get them." Daisy said the mayor, the sheriff, and his deputies, they're all sick. Is that right?
Yeah.
The sheriff and the mayor are dead. Not sure about the deputies, but they were both pretty sick. Doc's dead, too.
Really?
Damn, Sam said.
"I'm amazed you pulled through," Tom said.
"I guess someone had to," Sam replied.
"You know if Jameson, the butcher, is healthy?"
"No idea," Tom said. "Just had a thought that a man like that could have the stomach for a job like this. It might make him sick if he isn't already, though."
"That's a thought. He'd probably have some ideas on how to kill that lot better than we can. Gabe, can you run down the street, see if Jameson can be hired or has any ideas or any tools?"
Gabe nodded and went off at the closest to a run he had. Sam felt a great weariness, now that he was inside where it was warm.
"I don't think I could do you much more good, Tom," Sam said. "I should go back home and rest. Johnny's watching the wagon burn, and it looks like there won't be any rat problem from there. I'd like to help you, but I just don't think I can do anything more."
"That's perfectly all right, Sam," Tom said. "You've helped me plenty. Go take care of yourself. I'll make sure someone gets any news to you."
"Much obliged," Sam said, and got up to head home.
When he got home, he was bone tired. The energy from seeing the rats, from working hard to get the fire going, it was all gone, and he wanted nothing more than to sleep. He was woken up, probably around dusk, to judge by the light coming in the window, by a light knock at the door.
"Who is it?" he called.
"Daisy.
Come in."
She entered, and he was glad to see her.
"News?" he asked.
"Not much. No sign of Dunning anywhere. They're watching the railroad, they've got people going door to door trying to find him, but he seems to have just disappeared."
"How's Tom going with that room?" He's been blowing smoke in there a couple hours. Says he's going to do it all night. Guess he hopes that the smoke alone will kill them, or make them so weak that they can't run when he finally goes in. Gabe is going to tend the smoking fire overnight, then Tom will come in early morning with Jameson. Jameson has some tools he thinks will work to kill them quickly. Though he says they're way out of my line of work. He grinned at her close impression of the man's somewhat gravelly yet high voice. He wondered if Jameson was one of her clients, and if that was why she knew it so well. Then he felt ashamed of himself. It was not his business what she or he did. Anything else I should know? That's it. Need some food? Water? I have enough here, thanks. Still getting better? Yeah, that excitement earlier took the wind out of my sails, but I think I'm still on the mend. Good. And good night, Sam. Night, Daisy. She left. He stayed up for a while, but then managed to get back to sleep. In the morning, he went over to the Nugget. He was feeling quite a bit better. Tom and Jameson, the butcher, had done their work. Sam decided he didn't need to see it. "We got him, Sam," Tom said, grinning, but a little green, too. Sam wondered if it was the unpleasant work, or if they had gone in too soon while the fumes and smoke from the fire were still in the room. He had no idea how many rats might have made their way out, and beyond that, how many Dunning had set loose. There'd be rats to deal with for a long time, he suspected. He went out back and checked the smoldering ashes of the wagon. Some of the tongue and the yoke were practically intact, but the rest had burned away. A corner of the bed, though, was still discernible. It, indeed, had been built hollow. Sam looked, but could see no rat corpses. He presumed they had burned completely away. Johnny surely would have seen if they had escaped during the fire. And strange to say, that was all. Robert Dunning, the undertaker, was never seen again. With the leadership of the town in shambles, Sam Lockhart himself was made sheriff of Goldenlode. He was known for putting out harsh measures to destroy the vermin population, so much so that the town in later years had a nickname of Ratsbane. Tom's Big Nugget had hard times for a while after the Dunning incident. No one outside of a few people knew about the masses of rats that had been found in the room, for they were all Tom's friends and had been paid well besides, so his reputation wasn't hit. However, word got out about the plague of Goldenlode, and it was a number of years before people came to the town in any great numbers. The mines had to raise the wages of their miners to get people to come at all. And as money often does, it attracted people, despite the danger. And as the town recovered, so did the Big Nugget. Sam and Daisy remained on good terms, and he saw her fairly often as an informant. Lorraine saw the benefit of having Daisy be friends with the sheriff, and put her in the will. Because of this, Daisy eventually took over Madame Lorraine's when Lorraine herself passed on following a heart attack. Daisy was glad to have good terms with the law of the city, and in her turn, she made sure that her place did not attract trouble. She kept the name of the place, and many strangers in town called Daisy Lorraine, mistakenly assuming that the owner must be Lorraine herself. Sam eventually fell in love again and married a woman, Anne, who came to town some 10 years after he became sheriff, when the town was clean and reputable again. His connections with his various informants helped greatly with his job as sheriff, and Gabe and Johnny eventually both became deputies. Though Gabe still couldn't get around too well, he made himself very useful and helped modernize the department in later years. He even learned to type on one of the first typewriters in the state. Some 5 years after marrying Anne, Sam became mayor, and Gabe, to some people's surprise, but not to Sam's, became sheriff. And he remained mayor for another 8 years before retiring. His legs and back were both getting bad, and he wanted to spend time with Anne. But he always had one ear out for the sound of a rat scurrying in a wall.
And that's the story. If you have any comments or questions about this episode or previous episodes, cryptobiography@gmail.com, or hit us up on Facebook, X, or Mastodon, and thanks for listening. Words and music copyright 2024, Brandon Starr, all rights reserved. Characters and events are fictional, fictionalized, or satirical.